This audio is from the July 22nd special school board meeting outlining their refortification plan, which is their guideline for the reopening of our schools on schedule this fall. You should also go to fortrecoveryschools.org and scroll down to the visual files that go along with this audio. Look for refortification plan. Here is School Superintendent Larry Brown.
Well, thank you, everybody. We're pleased to have members of our district leadership team here. I'm going to talk into the mic, and we want to thank FR Radio for doing the audio and recording this presentation for us. It will be on their site, and we'll post the link to their archives on our Fort Recovery website, along with tomorrow we'll be placing a PDF version of our refortification plan on that website. So, we do have six areas of discussion tonight. So the overview will include some background information, the materials and the prepping for the refortification plan, some common principles that are in Mercer County, and including other districts in the Mercer County's ESC area. Coordination with our health department, specific guidance for special situations, and just the dynamic, ongoing nature of this plan. It will change in the next 4 to 5 weeks. And we'll try to push out the changes and provide additional information as new information comes up. We're pleased to have our district leadership team. They're made up of classified, certified, and administrative team members within our district, and they represent all three of our school buildings. Tonight presenting, and this is not the entire team, but those that have agreed to present tonight are Mrs. Kanapke, Matt Kearns, who's back right here, Matt, Tony Stahl, who's already talked tonight, along with Jill Ranley, who will be presenting. Jill's back in the back there. Kelly Toby, our elementary principal, myself, and Jessica Judy, who's also represented here, one of the buildings. So we're pleased to have them here, and we certainly appreciate them participating in the plan. And so you'll hear their different voices tonight on the audio version of this. So our first speaker is Kelly.
Thank you. I just have a few slides. One of the things we just want to make sure that everybody knows is that we are working with the county health department. We're working with them, not alone, and with the other schools, but we want everybody to know that we will be implementing the recommended safety protocols at the highest degree possible, because we want to make sure that we are doing what is best for our staff and for our students. And with that, we also want to make sure that the community, parents, students know that we will be transparent as we plan and we move forward, but there's always going to be a level of risk when you send a child to school or when you as a parent or a volunteer enter a school building. There is always going to be some type of risk that goes along with that. So we, knowing that, are going to put things in place with our buildings that address what the students will do, how they will move throughout the building, what our classroom sizes will look like, the operations, and just the logistics on a day-to-day basis.
So I'm just going to go over a few things that we've purchased to help stay safe and keep things sanitized. We have liter-sized hand sanitizer stations, bottles that will be in each of the classrooms. We have COVID signage that will be throughout the building, especially at all the entrances of the buildings. We will have face coverings provided for all of our staff. There'll be two styles of masks that will be an option, along with two styles of face shields that our staff will have. We've added 13 more touchless digital thermometers that will be displayed throughout the buildings. We also have 55 gallons of vital oxide and Dominator. It's like a sanitizer, a cleaner. The Dominator is a solution that comes in a spray bottle to help sanitize, and the next slide will show how that works. Yeah, we've added four more oxide machines that come with backpacks to help use in transportation and throughout the buildings.
Okay, most of what's on these next couple slides is common principles that we have across Mercer County. They're coming directly from the health department. Just stating, we're going to be cleaning surfaces. Obviously, we're going to be cleaning frequently. We're going to be limiting the number of visitors and field trips. We're eliminating those for now until for their, you know, to as we reevaluate and go forward. We're going to be keeping our safety protocols in place and letting that communication come forward. And like Mrs. Toby said earlier, basically it's just saying that no matter what we do at school, there is still a level of risk in children coming to the school, and that's a choice as we make moving forward. Like we said, we're working with the health department in terms of testing as to when students would be tested. If a student should be tested and has the COVID, that we're asking that they have been fever-free for at least 3 days to return and have it's been 10 days past the onset of their symptoms. That's, like we said, is coming directly from the protocol of the health department. What should happen if a student or a staff member is found to have COVID? As we stated earlier, the health department is going to be in contact with students, parents, the school, kind of to determine who were close contacts, and those people would be required to self-quarantine and monitor symptoms for 14 days. So again, that all comes through the health department. That's not coming through the school.
The next couple of things that I have to talk about here are specific situation guidance for different areas of the district or the buildings or the grounds or the facilities, things like that. The two that I'm going to talk about specifically are playground equipment and the busing. So the first one here is, you know, does playground equipment require any special attention? You know, we routinely clean and monitor and check those areas, you know, on a day-to-day basis. So we're going to continue to do our normal kind of cleaning schedule. CDC recommendation is that spraying, you know, some of those things that Deanna was talking about earlier, is not necessarily an effective use of available resources. So that's going to be kind of our approach to the outdoor playground equipment. Now it's going to be a little bit of a different story on my next slide with the bus and transportation. So with the busing this year in transportation, we're going to utilize back-to-front seating for pickup and front to back drop-off, obviously to kind of minimize student contact in the aisleway of the bus. Obviously, that's a little bit tighter. And then vital oxide with those spray guns that Deanna was talking about earlier will be the primary method of disinfecting those buses each day. And so that's going to be something that our bus drivers are going to do. And then the other part of that transportation piece is obviously this is a very changing and dynamic situation, as we've seen the last couple of days. And so, like Mr. Brown said, in the next couple of weeks, we don't necessarily know which way this might go. You know, obviously adhering to any mandates or policies or things that we need to do from the state level down, we may adopt minimum requirements for busing if we need to in order to reduce the number of students who might be on those buses. I mean, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. Brown, but I think the minimum busing would be anybody K-8 and then outside of 2 miles of the school district, and so those would be the students that we would work to bus, and then anybody that did not meet those requirements would not receive busing in order to cut down on the numbers.
Now let's be clear, that's not where we're at right now, but if there could be changes that would limit the number of students that could ride on a bus, that would be a change. That's what our district would probably have to do to accommodate that.
And then the next one is just with seating charts, not necessarily seating charts, but just limiting the amount of students per seat and requiring 2 students per seat, in some instances 3, depending on the students, or attempting to sit siblings together. So whatever that might work to accommodate. I think Mr. Niekamp and the Transportation Department are getting those lists in and kind of compiling those things here over the next couple of weeks so we can get those things out and set up for our bus drivers this fall. And then I will kick it to, I believe, Mrs. Raley.
I'm just going to talk a little bit about our guidance for our food service. Fort Recovery Local Schools will continue to offer our food service. There's going to be just a few changes in compliance. So the students will still be eating in the cafeteria. There will not be any self-service. Also, the condiments will all be individualized, so those high-touch surfaces of ketchup and mustard won't be there. Alternative locations and expanded table seating when possible basically just means we're going to try to make the best use of our areas. So we're going to spread the kids out throughout the cafeteria, possibly use some other places, maybe like the stage in the elementary and middle school or in the high school, the commons, things like that, to make sure that we can maintain that social distance. Our guidance for the outdoor activities, there's a lot of scientific documentation that the virus can be transmitted outdoors, but it's a lot less likely to be. So when we can, we're going to try to use some outdoor learning centers. So just so parents know, to possibly provide sunscreen or sun protective clothing for your students in those situations.
All right. One new option we have this year is the Fort Recovery Local Schools Virtual Academy. This is designed for those individuals that wish to continue the online education, either maybe based on that student's needs or their family vulnerability for COVID. A couple benefits. There still remained enrolled in Fort Recovery Local Schools. The progress that they have throughout their education using the Virtual Academy is monitored by staff. They get a device from the schools. And one key point on this is it meets the Ohio Department of Education attendance requirements, so we don't run into any issues there. A couple more benefits. The curriculum is provided from an established e-school consortium that's listed there. This is different from the ERL that we did to end the year. This is completely different from homeschooling. Those two options are a lot different. This is something that's kind of already established, already set up, and anybody grades K through 12 can take part in this. All right. On our website, there's a completely separate tab. It is under the schools tab across the top of the website. It gives you the intent form, and then there's more information available. That it's a couple page document that lists some of the other benefits of this program. You know, who qualifies, all those kind of things are listed on there. All right, now to the fun stuff. This is number five. This is our more specific situation guidances, and these change all the time. You know, this is stuff we worked on this today, and some of this stuff, there's going to be changes in the next few weeks before we get into school. We're sure of that. What we have now is this is, again, this is for students, optional for grades K through 12. But students who do wish to wear face coverings, whether they choose to wear a mask or a shield, they'll be encouraged to do so. That'll help reduce their risk and then the risk to others. When it comes to the staff will wear a mask, a face shield, or a combination of both. The exception to this is when they're alone in an area or not within a six-foot radius of another person. So certain classrooms, you could be set up where you guys can stay 6 feet away from your kids, still instruct, still get things done. Or if you're on like your prep time, your plan period, stuff like that, you don't have to sit in there by yourself with those on. This was a new one we added towards the end of our meeting today. Any community, extracurricular, and co-curricular events, there's going to be more information provided on those at a later date as we get more governor mandates on those.
Okay, preschool. So preschool is a little bit different because they fall under the requirements, guidelines, mandates for daycare and preschool buildings. So one of the things that preschool, and they're already working on with our maintenance staff, they have to have room partitions in place if they have more than 9 students within the classroom. The partitions have to be at least 6 feet tall, and part of it, they encourage for it to be see-through. We are still able to hold the preschool as planned, as scheduled. Like I said, all 92 kids are still ready to go, enrolled, and we can accommodate. We have to have 1 staff member per 9 students. So with that partition, that will allow us to still accommodate our numbers. That's going to be the biggest change, is the separation. And then the preschool will follow all of the other guidelines that we are putting in place for K through 12.
Once again, thank you to our DLT presenters. We certainly appreciate it. They've worked hard and tried to communicate with the staff to get staff input throughout the process, and they've done a wonderful job of trying to consolidate. That doesn't mean we're done with our planning. This is just an overview of where we are now currently with our planning. So we've waited until today, obviously for a reason. We knew things would be changing over the summer, and they certainly have changed. And we're trying to provide the best information at the time. And so we're glad that we did wait until the July 22nd. I knew this day would come eventually, but we started about 2 months ago saying middle or end of July is when we'll share a plan. So we have got a lot of continued work to do, but I feel good about the general plan that we have in place here for our students and our staff. Our county superintendents will continue to work with representatives from the Mercer County Department of Health and continue to monitor things. But it's certainly going to be a dynamic plan, as we found out today with the governor presenting information while we were meeting as a DLT about some of the things. So continue to monitor. But one of the things that we're going to be doing is trying to look back and focus on if we have to resort to an emergency remote learning plan, that we're a little bit more prepared. We basically, as many of you remember, I certainly remember that day, the governor said we're going to be on extended spring break, but it really wasn't. It was more like we're going to enter into emergency remote learning for Fort Recovery Schools, and the staff did a wonderful job,
And with the time they had preparing, we utilized some E-days to give them some extra time to prepare for that situation. But now we've continued to look at it, and we're looking at consistency, uniformity, so that our parents have a better idea what to anticipate if we do go into emergency remote learning again. So the information that we'd worked on today, part of the time we spent today was kind of putting some uniform K-12 guidance for our SLTs, our school leadership teams, to then focus on how that emergency remote learning will look like and have some uniformity. So we'll continue to develop that just in case we need it. In addition, now that we put out our plan finally, we've got about a month that our buildings then can look at specific situations, locations of water distribution centers where we can fill up water bottles and directions in the hallways, and maybe at the high school they might be coming down a different steps than they're used to coming down, and trying to avoid the least amount of direct interaction between students that we possibly can, and try to provide a safe and still enjoyable environment. It's still going to be, school is going to be an enjoyable experience as best that we possibly can make it. We don't want to make it have so many restrictions that the students feel anxiety about coming to school. And we're cognizant of some of the things that have happened in other districts. As I said, dynamic nature. We have daily counts that are starting to increase, and in our county, when you look at per capita number of cases, obviously we're pretty one of the higher counties in the state per capita, and so as far as cases. And so we'll have to watch and make sure that we continue to monitor that update and make changes in our plan as we need to. One of those possible things is the nature of the county alerts that have been initiated, and many people in the state were concerned about they're treating the whole state as one. We all stopped school all at one time, and we certainly at that time didn't have the same situations in each of our school districts. So with the county alert system in place, if we go to red, school closure could be considered, and according to our health department, if we move into a purple range, that would be a mandatory shutdown, and probably a shutdown of most services within the county. I would think it would be similar to what we had in March is how I anticipate that. So we want to make sure that we discuss all the things that we need to do and do be safe and try to encourage our county from moving into those other higher levels of needs as far as our community. So once again, thank you. I'll start with the board. If they have any questions, we have the DLT here. We've had some discussions about a lot of topics. There are questions that we don't have specific answers to, and those will be kind of building level discussions, but I certainly would open up to see if there's anything else that we should share with our community.
Everywhere, basically. The students, I know you showed it as optional right now.
Yes.
Would that change today? Would that indicate that the students would be required to?
We're waiting to see what interpretation. Each time he puts out orders like that, there are frequently multiple interpretations of what he does, and then he usually clarifies. So we're going to wait until we have some more definitive answers to what he has done, similar to the statement of we're in then the spring break. But he was a little more clear today than that. So, but yeah, that's we're going to wait and see. That's why the dynamic nature is certainly true, especially for face masks. I think that the 10 and or the 9 and under probably will not change.
It didn't apply to
them. Yeah, and it didn't apply to them because they were optional. But we still could have a second grader that wishes to wear. We'll support their use of a mask if they wish to do that.
Mr. Ron, how about household cases?
That will be the focus of what the Mercer County Health Department will provide as guidance. We'll be so supportive of trying to provide contact information, seating locations, bus routes, and try to provide any of the tracing information that they need. But we'll be relying on them to make decisions and telling the parents that they are to either self-quarantine or they're on our quarantine. So, good question. Okay.
When you talked about kids needing to be off for 14 days if they're like suspect or something.
Mm-hmm.
Is that 14 calendar days?
It is. Okay. Yeah, it's 2 weeks. And in essence, 2 weeks of school unless there's a a break, they could get a little less than that if it's under over a holiday period.
Homework would be handled the way it is currently, where the student
has extended absence. As it currently stands, yes, they would have time to make up that work and have the same options. And we are going to kind of combine elements of the emergency remote learning and have our staff work together on uniformity of how we push out that plan. Oftentimes, you know, teachers send like here's what's coming up this next week, or they reviewed what happened during a week, and we're going to try to do more about that to have the parents be aware of what's assigned while they're missing that 2-week period if they have to do that. It counts as a non-student day, but truthfully, I guess to be totally upfront with our community, this year it's not going to matter to me what our report card says about attendance. So we're not focused on that. We're just trying to be safe. And our administrative staff has actually talked about some de-emphasizing perfect attendance things for this year, because it's really promoting kids coming to school sick. So we're trying to do things to counteract some of those attendance concerns. Certainly we want a kid to stay healthy, not utilizing that as a way not to come to school, but we certainly don't want students here when they're ill.
Yes.
We have 4 students now that have officially signed up. We've had inquiries, and we have 4 students that have assigned the form that we talked about, the intent form. So, and we anticipate now that they hear what some of the guidance is, you know, from our district perspective, that will increase. And that's for students designed to have a full year program. It's not designed to be something you move in and out of and go. Some days you go to school here, and some days you go to the virtual academy. It's designed to be a pilot program for 1 year, and it's a year-long curriculum. The scope and sequence of that curriculum doesn't identically match up with what our teachers are teaching each day. It does meet the Ohio standards and still teaches the same concepts, but it's not aligned with our grade level specific process of how they teach each one of those individual concepts and lessons. So hopefully that makes sense. Okay.